If you would like to hit the road with the Predators coming up, they'll be in Columbus on Saturday, March 14th to take on the Blue Jackets at Nationwide Arena. Tickets are on sale right now to purchase. Visit thegamenashville.com. All the net proceeds will go to relief efforts in the Nashville area. Deadline to purchase is 2 p.m. today. So keep that in mind, 2 p.m. today. And that will go to relief efforts. The trip is organized by simplyafan.com. Go check them out for other upcoming sports adventures. Transportation is provided by Gray Line of Tennessee. So if you'd like to go to Columbus on Saturday, March 14th, and watch the Predators and Blue Jackets, go to thegamenashville.com. And today's proceeds will go to relief efforts in the Nashville area. So if you've been thinking about it, today would be the day to sign up.
Yeah, absolutely. And we announced that yesterday of trying to do our part to help everything. So get on that. If you were thinking about it, if you were on the fence, I hope this helps you, because anything we get today is going towards relief effort. So get on that. Get on the bus.
Unfortunately, in a loss, it gets kind of pushed aside. But Roman Josi has had quite the special year. There's still 16 games to go. He has now had a career year in points. So congratulations to him. Picking up on a point on the Craig Smith power play goal, now has 62 points on the season. And also that point now makes him a career year in points for a defenseman in franchise history. So that just puts what he's done this year in perspective. And what stinks about that is you would think, with the type of year that he's having, and we know that he'll be a Norris Trophy candidate, that would mean really good things, but unfortunately they're still battling for their playoff lives, even though Roman Josi certainly pulled his share of the weight all season long. He was back at it again last night. I thought he was spectacular, albeit in a 3-1 loss.
He's just driving the play a lot. He had 11 shot attempts, and this is what he does. And I think Chris Mason stumbled upon, you know, The Point is a website that they have a lot of data, and you it's a paid site if you want all of the data, but they will tweet out little pieces every now and then. And the two players that are the most prolific at taking the puck from the defensive zone, carrying it into the offensive zone, are Connor McDavid and Roman Josi. Roman Josi is one. Connor McDavid is two. So just gives you the level of uniqueness of his game. And that's the thing, is he has done his thing in terms of point production and shot attempts, and he plays great defense. Ryan Ellis, in a per game basis, is having a career year as well. You know, he's missed 20 games, but his points per game right there. So those are the two guys that I think are really driving everything. I love the effort that they give. Ryan Ellis makes a great play last night, diving along the goal line to clear a puck that was sitting right there on the red. He got called for a penalty or two, but he was, you know, he's doing everything he can.
Yep.
And you just hope that rubs off. You know, like we keep talking about the same things, right? In 16 games, if the story is the same, then there's a good chance they're going to fall a couple points short, right? If they are what they have been all year long, they might end up out of the mix. They might. If they could just find another gear, I still feel really good about their chances of getting in.
Why, after 66 games, are we still saying, well, if they could just find another gear? I mean, that's the thing that bugs me of why it's still
a conversation. To quote John Hines, that's a really good question.
Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of like when Robbie Stanley followed up on Monday night and said, why do you keep having to tell this group how to play night in and night out? And he said, that's a really good question.
I don't understand it. I really don't. It's a talented group in there. And, you know, you can break it down to okay, player by player. All right, let's start Philip Forsberg. I truly believe that Philip Forsberg is in his own head right now. I think that's a lot of it. He had a big assist last night. He's had a couple of key assists as of late. He's firing the puck. They're just not going in. And I can understand, as a goal scorer, and you hear things, and you know your teammates are talking to you, your coach is talking to you. I mean, eventually that's all going to weigh on you, and it's going to be like, hey, what is going on with me? Why can't I put the puck in the back of the net? Why can't I score? So I kind of think that's what it is, and that's one of those things that hopefully he snaps out of, you know, at some point soon. But again, we're asking that question of, okay, well, when will that point come? When is he going to do that? Because that could change a lot of things. Willie, I said this yesterday when you were gone. I'll give you some credit. You, for a long time, were saying, when Ryan Ellis gets back, I mean, that's going to make a big difference. Ryan Ellis is a key piece that they're missing right now. And Darren and I both were like, we don't disagree with you, but temper expectations. He missed 20 games with a concussion. He's not going to just jump right back in and pick up where he left off. Well, guess what he did? So he has made a big difference. But now you need Philip Forsberg to be that guy and start playing like the Philip Forsberg that we all think he can be. Matt Duchene, another one we talk about. Ryan Johansson, it's gotten a little better, but there's another, you know, there's definitely another level there. Victor Arvidsson, a little bit better, missing something there.
It's hard to explain. I mean, all of them, for one reason or another, it's the same guys that we're talking about. And you get specific, right? You guys have done the numbers, right? Johansson, Duchene, Forsberg, Arvidsson, Turris. Those are the guys that are performing under their career numbers. And I think they would be the first to say, looking in the mirror, hey, not playing as well as I have, or I'm not getting the results. I mean, there are certain nights. I think Matt Duchene, the last few games, has been dynamic with the puck, but it's just not turning into a whole lot of production right now. It's a head-scratcher, right? I mean, if it's a head-scratching for us, what's it like for them? What's it like for the coaches? They're still trying. I guess the point I try to keep making is it's not too late, right? If it keeps going for 16 more games, then everybody will think about it all summer, right? We'll be talking about it all spring and summer. We'll watch all the playoffs and say, you know, what could have been. But you got 16 games to do something. You know what? They're not easy games. The schedule doesn't get easier. Two with Dallas in a row. Those are tough games. Dallas, one of the best defensive teams. That's not an easy game to break out offensively against. They'll shut you down.
Two goals in overtime.
They can absolutely
still
stifle you. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to D up. Then you go on the road for four. Right? It's really five, but it's a home and home with Dallas. Come home, regroup for a day and a half or so.
Yep.
Then go back out. Got two more with Colorado.
But this was an important week. I mean, this was a very, and I know you, every game's important, but starting with you had won three in a row. You go, you play Colorado, and I know that didn't end the way that you wanted it to. There was a questionable call, and we can all talk about that, but you also didn't score on the power play when you had the opportunity to do so. So you just shake that one off, and then you turn back around and have a absolute awful third period against Edmonton and lose 8-3. Then you have Minnesota. I mean, these were very important games, not only in your division, but in your conference and teams that you're chasing. And so far, they have not stepped up and lived up to the expectations. They haven't capitalized.
Yeah, they you were hoping to continue to get to the next gear. And I think, by and large, just in a basic sense, in those three games, they've been outplayed, right? I don't think you can say, other than pieces of certain games, that you deserve better.
Right.
Right? You can't always eke out the one goal win. So the last three games, they're 0-3, and they probably deserve to be over 0-3. You know, they have to play better. You can't come out and expect the other team to not have a good game. Right? They played three teams that I thought all played very solid games. Right? I thought Minnesota played very well last night. They are playing well. Edmonton is playing well, and they had an excellent game. And then Colorado, even with all the injuries, they had an opportunity to play Colorado on the back half of back-to-backs, having Andrei Burakovsky get sick, can't play right before the game. They have a defenseman playing forward. You know, you're catching them now, albeit they're playing lights out. Right, they're playing great, but with their personnel being down a little bit, you're hoping to take advantage of that, and they couldn't quite do it. So there has to be a better level. I still believe they're capable of it.
Let me just say this, because and I'll try to keep this brief, but I know a lot of not a lot. There are some. What is it? The vocal minority?
Yeah. I feel like there's a rant coming.
A little bit. It's a minor one, but it's like let's all take a step back and let's breathe for just a second and not get caught up in the moment. We have not ran from what Kevin Fiala is doing. He was the first star of the week. He has been outstanding. Heck, we saw it here. We saw when Kevin Fiala is dripping with confidence in how dynamic he can be. Okay, we've seen it here. It's not anything new, this 15-game stretch that he's going through in Minnesota. Right now, he is on an absolute heater. If you were at a table in Vegas, they would tell you to never get up on the heater that he's on. Do not get up and walk away. You can't win with scared money. Stay there and ride it out. Just stay on the heater. Kevin Fiala has 12 goals and 11 assists in the last 15 games. That's 23 points in the last 15 games. He's got five straight multi-point games. We just told you the significance of that. It's never been done in Minnesota Wild history. For all the people out there that now have decided, and I saw some of this chatter last night, and I said, I know this is a small group, but of, you know, that's why they should have never traded Kevin Fiala away. That's why you never give up on Kevin. He's too young, and first-round pick, and all the stuff that was being thrown out there because Kevin Fiala is playing out of his mind right now. Once again, let's take a step back and let's breathe and let's all remember why it happened. Why? What have the Predators been in at the trading deadline the last 2 years, except for this year? Okay, the two previous years. What have they been in? Go for it mode. All in mode, right? It's what everybody wanted. You go for it. Why wouldn't you? 2 years ago, you were the best team in the regular season. We know what's been going on the last 3 or 4 years, right? We've all seen the ride. It's go for it mode. Chips are all in. Well, if you're in that mode and you have a 20-year, tell me, for all the people that have said that, when you have ever heard on these airwaves or anywhere where you've read that Kevin Fiala, the reason that he was traded is because he lacks talent. Show me the article. I want to hear the audio. I want to read the article that said Kevin Fiala was traded for lack of talent. Like it's just not there. He wasn't worthy of a first round pick.
How many times on our show in the weeks leading up to trading Kevin Fiala did we discuss that exact thing?
That's my point. It has never been about talent,
right,
or lack of for Kevin Fiala.
And the day that David Poile made the deal, he said, you know what? I think so. I still believe someday Kevin Fiala is going to be a great player.
Right. But why do you have to believe? It's not about what he can do. It's not about what he can do on the ice. It's everything that we had talked about for years. Yeah.
It was what was going to happen.
With David Poile on this show, it was about what? His maturity,
yeah,
or lack of. Being a pro. So the things behind the scenes that it takes, albeit a very young player. Very young. A lot of the stuff we were talking about, he was still basically a kid, even though he was an adult. Still viewed as a kid.
He's still right now today only
23. He's 23. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, some old man. He's grown up, all grown up. Let's also not forget that it has not been rosy the whole time he's been in Minnesota. You understand he's been in the doghouse in Minnesota too.
This year?
He's been a healthy scratch this year. Okay? And so he has pulled himself out. Obviously, the coaching change has helped him tremendously. But just remember, the Predators and David Poile was in go-for-it mode, and David decided, you know what? If you're in go-for-it mode now, and your chips are in the middle of the table now, you don't have time to wait around and hope that Kevin Fiala turns into and blossoms really more behind the scenes into what you're looking for than really out on the ice. Because everybody knows what he can do on the ice. He's a tremendous talent. Everybody's known that, and everybody's seen these stretches. We've seen these stretches before. This is not new. These 15 games, this is not new. He's done this before. He's won big games. Memorable games for the Predators, okay? But just remember, don't get caught up in these 15 games. Like, how could you because of these last 15 games? Understand why it happened. Oh, by the way, if you say all that, So are you saying that Granlund hasn't done anything since he's been? By the way, since the coaching change, he's been arguably their best player. So what has really been?
Goals.
So what's been the gap between Granlund and Fiala? It's not really much of a gap. So there's not. It's not like one guy's done absolutely nothing and the other guy has gone bonkers.
Well,
both of them have had lots of success really since the coaching change. It clearly it worked for both of them. I'm just saying. Let's not get caught up in the 15 games, okay? And then all of a sudden, now let's second guess. Because I would ask those people that threw that stuff out there last night, have you been doing that this whole time? Because I want to see the tweets. I want to know if you've been questioning the trade the entire time. Or maybe now that the Predators just lost to Minnesota and you saw Kevin Fiala score and then you've seen his goals and you realize he was the first star of the week, you're like, I knew they should have never traded him. I told you. Did you just start? You just now started vocalizing your, you know, how you feel, or have you felt this way the whole time and been putting it out there for all of us to read, especially when he was being a healthy scratch and in the doghouse in Minnesota?
Hindsight's 20/20 for sure. We, if you listen to our show, we try to give you all the layers to this. You were trying for the short term gain, and it remains to be seen what Mikhail Granlund's future is with this franchise. Maybe he stays when it's all over. Even if he doesn't. You were trying to get a more mature player, a player that has more layers to his game. Mikhail Granlund does all of the little things that help you win. That mm-hmm. is another issue with Kevin Fiala. We said it before you
both ends of the
Kevin
ice.
Kevin Fiala is a guy that has to score and make dynamic plays to be an impact player, which he is doing right now. He is doing that. But he's not a guy that's going to kill penalties. He's not a guy that's going to be on the ice at the end of the game when you're trying to protect a one-goal lead. He's the last guy you're going to have out there. He will still take chances and turn the puck over. But in exchange for that, you're going to get plays like you're getting right now if you're the Wild, and that mm-hmm. those guys are hard to find. So for this franchise, the Predators, last year, they felt like they had enough guys who could score. They needed a guy who can score, Mikhail Granlund, and is a better overall two-way, 200-foot player, mm-hmm. a more mature player. You know, Kevin Fiala will drive you crazy, but he's that rare talent that is very, very hard to find. That release that he's got, it's wicked when he's got it going. So it's going to be a trade that people will continue to – the thing that the Wild get out of it, and this is what they were trying to do as a whole, and Paul Fenton got drilled, but really Bill Guerin has continued along the same path that Paul Fenton did. A lot of people may not want to admit that in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
but they're making the roster younger. They're taking a chance on players who are a little bit maybe flawed and not fully matured, but they are talented. Ryan Donato is another one.
Yep.
Alex Galchenyuk is another one. And in exchange for getting rid of guys that we're going to lose eventually anyway, they're trying to get out of salary cap.
Higher price guys.
Yeah, trying to get out of the salary cap jail and retool with younger guys. And they may have hit it big here with Kevin Fiala. We'll see how it keeps going.
Yep. We'll come back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. There you go. Last night. Pretty interesting SEC basketball. Vanderbilt going to Tuscaloosa and getting it done over Alabama. Their first road victory. When's the last time they've won an SEC game on the road?
March 3rd of 2018.
Oh.
2 years.
Been a hot minute.
2 years.
Hot minute.
And then, you know, we've got the monitors on here in studio, and I've got one of the TVs on Kentucky and Tennessee, and not being able to really pay any attention to it other than just look up there and see that Kentucky was in control most of the way, especially the first half, early second half. And the next thing you know, I look up there, and Tennessee just kept chopping, chopping, chopping. And then I look up there, and they're in the lead. Then I look up there, they won. What happened?
They won?
They won. They went to Lexington. What a win. Who can figure out this Tennessee team?
Nobody.
You think they'd like to have that Auburn game back now? They'd have road wins at Auburn and at Kentucky. You think that would pad a resume?
Yeah, that would help. But I'll say this, you know who could figure them out? The same person that can figure out the Preds will be able to figure out Tennessee.
And who is that?
Good question.
But on one hand, though, I can look at Tennessee and say I think they've done a pretty good job, because I don't see, when I watch them play, anything close to what they were the last couple years when they had Schofield and why am I blanking on the other guy, the post up guy who had all the
Grant Williams.
Yeah, what, you know, those two guys plus Bone, you know, they don't have those guys anymore. This is a new group of guys playing completely different roles. So on one hand, they've done a pretty good job, I think. It kind of got skewed because early in the season they were in the top 25. And you're like, hey, man, top 25, okay. But were they really a top 25 when they were put there? I'm not sure they were ever that good. But give them credit. You know, they've gone through some tough times here. They're still not on the radar for the NCAA tournament, but hey, went out here, have a huge SEC tournament, could maybe make it interesting here. I don't know. Probably too late. Probably looking at NIT.
But you'll have another installment on Friday.
We'll have another
what
installment.
What would a win at Auburn and Kentucky have done? How close would that put them?
Well,
that would change everything, right?
Oh, sure, of course.
I mean, I know it doesn't matter because they did win at Auburn, but they were up 17 in the second half.
Well, they only have two what you call quad one wins, right? They've played a lot of them. They've played a tough schedule. You know, they're 38th in strength of schedule. That's a pretty tough schedule when you get down to it. But they needed like two more. Let's instead of 2-9 in quad one, if they were 4-7, then they're a bubble team, right? Then we're talking about game by game. Joe Lunardi would have them on the screen, I think, every time he goes on there. And this is the time of the year where in the middle of the game, there's Joe, right? And it's wherever he is. I wonder where Joe is. Is he in his house? Is he in his basement?
I don't know.
Is he in his parents' house?
I don't know where Joe lives.
Is he in Bristol?
I bet he has like a room.
Is he in Philadelphia? Where is Joe?
I don't think he leaves Bristol this time of year.
And sometimes he's on the phone, right? Sometimes you just see Joe's head pop up there.
It's his own picture studio.
Of Joe, and you hear Joe's voice. Other times they have Joe somewhere in a phone booth or something, and there's a camera on him. It's just fascinating to me how, like, in the middle of a game, the last four in, first four out changes. That's crazy to me. It's not that complicated when you get down to it, but ESPN, that's part of the drama for them, I guess.
One thing that really would have helped Tennessee is, too, and it's not really going in their favor, is a couple of their losses have been, like, at South Carolina and at Cincy, who are also two bubble teams as well. So they've got some head-to-heads against some fellow bubble teams that haven't really gone their favor this season.
And Vanderbilt still is not on the bubble, despite the good win last night. And now hitting double-digit wins.
Hey, they're like in like the first 200 out.
But I got to tell you, that was a great win. Alabama is still on the radar, right? Alabama still had some hopes. That killed it right there.
Yep.
And how about this was what was funny to me. I didn't see any of the game. It was head-to-head with the Predators game last night, but Saban Lee has 38 points. They win the game on the road, and the SEC Network gives the player of the game to Bolden from Alabama. What happened? That's how you just made the list right
that
there.
Made
Come
no
on.
Sense.
Oh, like that never goes on in hockey with stars? Like all the time, you were like
the number one star of the game?
Yeah, I mean it, sometimes at other places they're like, what?
Oh, absolutely. No, I get that.
Come on.
On the three stars.
The three stars, right.
But usually the winning team has the first star, unless it's just a phenomenal performance by.
Like there haven't been any eyebrow? Like,
oh, there's been eyebrows
tilts.
All the time.
Really?
But a first star from the other team who loses the game? In other words, okay, Saban Lee, he scored 38 points. They win the game. He's the first star of the game.
Yes. Should be.
Like Leon Draisaitl the other night was the first star of the game, hands down. They won the game.
Mm-hmm.
Usually if the road team wins in Bridgestone Arena, they have the first star of the game. There might be a Predator that gets a star if the game is close, but the road team will have the first star of the game. Should, anyway. Unless somebody has a hat trick and they lose.
You go around all these buildings.
Absolutely.
You haven't looked at Mason like,
does it skew,
really?
It skews towards the home team.
No question about it.
But this is the SEC Network. This isn't the Alabama SID handing out the award for the player of the game. This is the SEC Network.
I can't explain that one.
That's weird.
I'm at a loss.
Some of the GIFs on Twitter were funny by the Vanderbilt fans. Like, come on, man. We haven't won a game in 2 years on the road. You can't even give our guy who scored 38 points the player of the game?
All right. We will come back and head over to DCA. We'll talk to their football coach, Paul Wade. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We talked about it yesterday for 90% of the show, tragedy that happened in our area, and the relief efforts and everything everybody's had to endure since late Monday night, early Tuesday morning. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, and one of those, we said, homes, businesses, churches, and schools have been affected by the tornado. And one of those schools was DCA. We talked about it yesterday on the program. Paul Wade is the DCA football coach, and he is on the line with us. Coach, how you doing?
Good. How you guys doing today?
Well, we've been thinking about you guys a lot, been thinking about a lot of people in our area, and certainly you guys were affected tremendously. It was tough to look at the visuals, but how tough was it for you when you had to show up and see what your school looked like?
Well, kind of a loss for words, really.
Yeah.
And we say this all the time, and I tell my own boys this all the time, that there's always somebody out there that's got it just a little bit worse. I got here about 2:35 that morning when I got a call, and obviously there was no power anywhere. It took probably 45 minutes to get from my house, which is just about 7 miles away, to get here. And when I got on campus, I absolutely could not believe, what I told a guy yesterday on the radio was that it's stuff you see on TV that you never think you will ever see in person. Well, we saw it in person, and it was absolutely unbelievable.
You say that it took 45 minutes, basically a 7-mile trek. Is that because trees and debris in the road? I mean, what was it like trying to get there?
There was so much stuff in the road because it really had just hit within the last 45 minutes, and the trees, the power lines, which you say you're never supposed to cross or touch, so you're kind of questioning that. You couldn't get down every road, Lebanon Road and Central Pike, even at that hour were at a dead standstill. Everything was just impassable, so I had to actually park out on Lebanon Road and walk to the back of the school just to get down here. It was so bad.
How bad is it? We've seen, obviously, I think most of the stuff we saw was like more of the elementary school just completely gone, but to paint the whole picture, I mean, is it all wiped out?
All wiped out. I'm actually sitting in my office right now. The back half of the campus did not have as much damage, obviously, as the front. But because of the structural situation, they have already told us that we will not be able to use the building for the remainder of the school year. The administration is actually off campus today meeting with different churches and businesses that have availability of space for us to move our school for the remainder of the year. Now, back in 2010 when the flood hit, I wasn't here then, but, the stories I hear and being part of the school from back in the 90s, I knew what was going on. They had to finish the school year at local churches and office places because the school was unusable because of the flood. What's the same case now? Probably, I would guesstimate, 75% of it had some type of damage. There's probably more structural damage than we know about. It's still being investigated as we speak. The amount of people who are on campus today, professional people working, we've had to cut back the hands-on people. It's been unbelievable. The community people, churches, the other schools, the other Christian organizations that wanted to get involved, and we've had to turn people away because we're still waiting for this whole entire process to go through evaluation, which has not happened yet.
Wow. It's a lot to handle, I know, Coach, and we really appreciate you coming on to tell us what you can at this point. And this is certainly not the top priority in the grand scheme of things here, but this is a sports show, so I'll just ask, because I know the sports community is a place where a lot of people can band together to get through tough times like this. So from an athletic standpoint, can your sports teams, for example, in the spring, can they continue to play eventually and continue to practice and do the things that they enjoy doing together?
Well, to answer the question, yes. How that's going to work, we're still trying to figure that out. Fortunately enough, the storm hit at night. Had it hit during the school day, this would probably be talking to me. This would be on a bigger national world scale due to deaths, as much damage as there was, especially in the elementary wing. But luckily, our seniors are on their senior trip in Orlando. Our juniors are out doing career exploration internships this week. Our sophomores are out doing community service. Our freshmen are in D.C. So we kind of had an empty campus anyway, except for the elementary school. But those kids are about to return tonight in the morning. A lot of their cars were just completely destroyed. You know, there's still a lot of situations that we're going to have to deal with when the kids get back on campus. Just trying to work through it and see, you know, really what God's plan is for our school, for our people. The community outreach has been unbelievable. You know, everybody from Coach Mason at Vanderbilt to all the local Christian schools, public schools, who've reached out to me personally wanting to come help. As far as the question, I know that was a long answer. Our coaches have been told to prepare to play the remainder of their spring schedule off campus. We're hoping that we can get the baseball and the softball facility back to just where our kids can hold practice here on campus, because the damage that those two facilities received is phenomenal. It's going to take a while just to get them cleaned up where a ball could be played out on those fields.
It's a beautiful campus that I've seen, beautiful facilities. I've been there many times. So, Coach, another thing that, you know, when you have a crisis like this, it's tough on kids, but kids are so resilient. I'm just curious, your feedback, what I don't know if you've had much interaction with the students yet on any of the levels. I mean, it's a K-12 school. As you mentioned, a lot of them have been out doing different things, but what's the feedback you're getting there?
Well, a lot of my football guys have reached out on their own trips and doing different things. I saw a few here actually on campus yesterday. You know, being a believer, we have to believe that the superior power, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, has got a hand in this. And being a Christian institution, you know, we talk about those things daily. So we hope and pray that our kids believe that there is a reason that the Lord places nothing in our lives that He doesn't think that we can't handle without Him, to look for His guidance. And being a foundation as a Christian institution, you know, we hope our kids can lean on that. Obviously, when it hits at home, you know, a lot of times those beliefs do get stressed. And it's a great opportunity for us as believers and as mentors to these students and student athletes to get them geared back to where the light is and what our purpose here is in this community.
We're talking to Paul Wade. He's the head coach at Donaldson Christian Academy, head football coach. And I spent a lot of time on your campus. I went to FRA, and we, you know, FRA DCA had some great rivalries back in the day. They still do, still love those games, but it was always, you know, fighting for the same things and the same beliefs. And you mentioned earlier about the outpouring of support from everyone else. Expand on that a little more of, you know, some of the other schools, maybe even some rivals that have reached out that are trying to help you guys recover.
Well, one of my good friends, Jeff Brothers at National Christian, who we actually coached together at CPA back in the day, he actually brought his team here today along with some other students within the school. And even though we told them they couldn't come on campus, they said, that's fine. They went straight into the neighborhood. You know, what I mentioned earlier, there's always somebody who has a little bit something worse. There were probably two dozen or more homes in our neighborhood, because our school's in a neighborhood. that are no longer standing. One of my former players, his house is directly behind the school, and he has nothing left but a foundation. He lost everything, he and his wife, that they own. And so Jeff took his team. They're up in the neighborhood right now as we speak, helping the community out. But like I said, we've had every private Christian school in Nashville that you can think of, a lot of the public schools, a lot of personal friends of mine coaching, you know, at different places, Davidson, Ensworth, CPA, all those guys have reached out. Coach Mason at Vanderbilt's reached out. Walter Wells from EKU's reached out. Dwayne Alexander from Tech has reached out. It's been unbelievable, really, of people wanting to help. And it's almost overwhelming because we've had to tell them no, because at this time, you know, there's nothing they can do. And always related to this, man, you know, when you bury a loved one, and I'm not comparing this to that, but just the emotional feeling of it, you know, everybody wants to be around you at that time. But those people really need people 2 and 3 weeks down the road. And our community is going to need help 2 and 3 and 4 months down the road. And we hope those people who are extending that Christian hand today are going to be there to help us in a few months, because that's really where we're going to need it.
You know, we always look at sports as kind of a way to help us through times like this. And I pulled up your football schedule, August 21st, 2020. I know it's several months away. There's a lot of work to be done. But is that for you to kind of help you through the process and your boys? You look at that date of going, you know, that's going to be our goal and that's going to be a night of healing?
Well, for me personally, it is, being the head football coach. You know, being an academic Christian institution, I have other higher goals than the game. But maybe you follow me on Instagram, and I actually posted that yesterday, a picture of our stadium. Our mascot is still painted on the field like it was the last playoff game. Our press box is completely destroyed on the ground. Our goalposts are down. The scoreboard is completely mangled. The bleachers are damaged. There's fencing tore up everywhere. And as of yesterday, there were 171 days until that first home game. And, you know, that's a goal for us to shoot for. God only knows what's going to happen between here and there, where we're going to be. You know, spring practice is going to happen. Coach Z and myself, the strength coach, we talked last night about how we're going to handle the remainder of all season weights, because if they tell us that we can't be in the building, we got to figure out how we're going to continue to lift. So there's a lot of obstacles to overcome. It's going to make it challenging. It's going to make it fun. I know how that might sound, but it really is, because it's going to make us step outside the box. A lot of times in athletics, we get kind of put in our own little bubble about how we do things, and being a person who likes to look outside the box at how other people do things and how we can expand and grow, man, what a great opportunity. As sad as it is, as much as it's going to cost, as much as our faith's going to be tested, man, what a great opportunity for this community.
Just know that you guys are in our thoughts, and we really appreciate your time, and I know you'll get through this. And you know what? We'd love to check back in with you down the road and see how things are coming along. Thanks for coming on.
That'd be awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.
All right, that is Paul Wade, DCA's football coach, and you just heard a little bit about what they've gone through over at Donaldson Christian Academy. And, wow, he painted the picture, that's for sure.
What a great attitude.
Yeah.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah. Make sure, like we said yesterday, whatever you think, you know, you've viewed as put you in a bad mood or you can't believe that's happening, then just think about what really is going, what real problems are.
And as he said, his perspective too was great. Hey, we got it tough, but there's always somebody that's got it tougher, right? That's always a great thing to keep in mind.
Pretty incredible outlook considering the circumstances. I want to talk to you about USS, United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served Middle Tennessee, our area, since 1994, and they have a whole lot of satisfied customers. How about 18,000 satisfied residential customers? And maybe you've been outside and you've noticed the bricks are cracking, or there's some cracking in your bricks, or walls are bowing. Maybe you've been opening, closing your doors or windows, especially when the weather's nice, and you've noticed that they've been sticking, or drywall separating, or stair step cracks in masonry mortar joints, a chimney maybe that's tilting or leaning. I could go on and on. These are all signs that maybe your house is trying to tell you something. Maybe something is going on, and usually most of us are not equipped to handle those type of situations. So that's where You need to get the experts involved, and that's where USS comes into play. They believe in their quality of work. They believe in their reputation. They believe in integrity, and they're going to come out, and they're going to tell you what's going on, assess the problem, and tell you whether you need to get address it or don't worry about it. If you do, they're going to give you a free estimate if you need work done. Well, they're locally owned. They're licensed and insured, and as a homeowner, I hope that gets your attention. So if any of these things are going on and you need to get them out to your house, dial 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. You can always go to their website, USSTN.com. That's USSTN.com. And as they say, we guarantee our best. Call USS. Well, you heard that interview with Paul Wade, and that certainly puts things in perspective. There's a lot of people out there. You heard him talk about Jeff Brothers, who we've had on this show many times. We've known Jeff Brothers for a long time. We know his brother, Jody Brothers. And don't forget, Jeff coached Golden Tate, the Tate Brothers. And that's how far back we go.
Yeah, he had both of them.
Right.
He?
Oh, yeah. Was it Wesley?
Yeah. Wesley went
Wesley
to Vanderbilt.
Wesley was, I think, what, 3-4 years behind Golden?
That sounds right. Yeah, he, and you know, of course, went to Vanderbilt.
Right. And so we've known them a long time. And to hear that he just showed up with his team, we talked about.
I can so see that, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and they're just, okay, you can't come on campus, then fine. We'll just hit the neighborhoods. I've seen Vanderbilt baseball. We talked about that yesterday. They just went and bought waters and food, and they went to Red Cross, dropped things off. They've been out in the community. There's so many people doing such great work. There was free pizza at Bridgestone Arena yesterday. Speaking of free pizza, I just saw where the Sounds just tweeted out that they've got Hunt Brothers pizza. I mean, boxes and boxes and boxes. And their tweet said, it's hot and it's ready for anyone looking for a meal. We're going to head out on golf carts out in the community and pass out pizza.
That's great.
I mean, you just love seeing that stuff. And I know we're leaving stuff out because that's going on all over the place. But if we didn't have Paul Wade on, we wouldn't know that Jeff Brothers and some of his kids have showed up. But that's what's going on in communities affected by the devastation. I mean, there's just so many people. Look, I was buying... We're buying shirts, you know, the ones that are straight relief on just to help out and donating.
Right.
Stuff like that. I mean, and if we didn't have a lot of jobs going on, we'd be out there too. I wish we could walk around with just mics and a headset. We could multitask. I don't know how good the show would be.
I feel like I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Because you'd hear me, you know.
Breathing heavy?
Breathing heavy. Yeah. Groaning because I'm lifting something. Me and a chainsaw, probably
that
not good.
Me. Yeah, that's, I'm going to have to mix that one. I'm 86, you and a chainsaw.
Well, just, right. Just
what about like a blower? Just that would
yeah,
be, that's more
a
your
rake.
Style.
I can rake.
A rake,
leaves,
you could rake. You know?
Anything I can ride, I'm good on that, like a riding mower.
I remember.
I wouldn't really need that for this. So.
No.
After the floods, we did a lot of stuff like that. You know, there was a lot of just going out
oh,
there
yes.
and grabbing whatever mm-hmm. was needed at the time, whether it was a rake or a shovel or just putting on a pair of work gloves on and picking stuff up and moving it from one place to another. After the flood in East Nashville, one day, you know, there was just a central area where he showed up. I showed up to volunteer, and then without any communication at all, three guys showed up to work with me on my team. We just had a team of 4 or 5 people. Dan Muller. Who is the head coach now. He was an assistant coach for Kevin Stallings.
Dan Mullen?
Yeah. Dan Muller.
Oh, Dan Muller.
Yeah.
I don't know if...
Okay. Kevin Stallings, assistant coach at the time at Vanderbilt, who's now the head coach at Illinois State.
You didn't play with Dan Mullen.
No. Dan Muller played for Kevin Stallings at Illinois State and became his assistant coach.
Yes,
he's
did.
Now the head coach at Illinois State.
He is.
And then two other guys that you might know, Steve Chingang. Remember him?
Yep.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And a guy named Festus Azili. Now, yep. imagine Festus... showing up at the East Nashville, you know, wherever the the meeting post was and said, yeah, I'd like to volunteer. 7 foot tall.
He could get things out of trees or whatever.
Yeah, he was helpful.
Yeah.
But we had it, you know, we went over several houses and just started cleaning stuff up. It's amazing the spirit that you have in situations like this. And just thinking about the sounds, you know, with Germantown, that's their neighborhood, right? Germantown was hit very hard.
Just missed them.
I haven't seen any pictures of the stadium itself. Did they avoid some? Did they sustain any damage?
They had minor damage.
They put out. Because
it's very close by. I've seen some of the pictures of the stuff that was hit. It's very close to that park.
A block or two.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how close it was. They put out a release yesterday that there was no structural damage. They were shut down yesterday. They had no power. They also said that there were no employees, obviously, at the park or in the building when things hit, that there were some minor things. They were out assessing and said they were not going to show back up until the area basically had been deemed safe and in good working order. I had seen stuff out there that maybe the scoreboard was hit a little. There was some damage maybe to the guitar. But structurally, they said they were fine. But, I mean, it was, I want to say, 2 blocks probably. The path was 2 blocks away from the stadium.
I'm sure most people listening have been in that area over the last couple of years, but it is phenomenal. And what did we decide? Remember, we were thinking, was this the third, fourth year of the park? You know, it's the sixth year.
Yes, I know.
But in the 6 years, the transformation of that community with the ballpark being sort of a big catalyst there, it's just tremendous what all they've done there. So it's sad that I know there's going to be some rebuilding of that infrastructure that's going to take place here, but I'm sure it will happen, and it'll end up being better than it ever was.
As I've told a lot of people who have reached out, unfortunately, we've been around the block for a while now. This is, I'm going to say, the third tornado situation we've had to cover, starting in 98, 06, and then now. I told the story yesterday.
What's the second?
Do you remember we were talking to Tim Corbin that day about the weather, the impending weather, and he was telling us how he was going to try to get the game.
The flood?
No. Oh, the tornadoes that really went more north of town. Remember? Hit up in Hendersonville and Gallatin and that area. I think it was, what, 06, right? I think that sounds right.
Huh. I don't know why I'm not remembering that. Well, I remember.
Didn't Extreme Makeover come here and repair? That was part of the, that was from those tornadoes?
I feel like that's right. Yeah, I'd have to look it up.
From those tornadoes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
So you don't remember that?
I don't remember that.
I remember it that day because Tim Corbin had a game, and he was talking to us about how he's monitoring the weather.
I do remember that.
And he was trying to get the game in, and we were like joking afterwards, like, well, if there's anybody that'll get the game in, it's Tim. Now, we didn't know at the time
how serious it was going to be.
That. Remember, it was in the middle of the day. It was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon when it happened.
Okay, so it didn't hit downtown as much.
No, it went more north. Yeah.
I do remember in 2010, back in the old days when instead of the SEC Network, the precursor to that was the old CSS, and they had a lot of SEC games on.
Your source for sports?
Yeah. I was the CSS guy for Vanderbilt, and the Vanderbilt baseball team started a game against Georgia. Sonny Gray pitched, and it was as the flood was starting. But if you remember, the initial flood happened, and then it stopped. The rain stopped for a couple hours, and they actually started to play. And Georgia was protesting. They thought, well, maybe we shouldn't play. They tried to get the game in. It was probably not a good idea. They played about 4 innings, and then it started up again.
It's just like what we've talked about, Monday. You don't really know. I mean,
you have no idea.
You just don't understand what's about to happen.
Yeah.
So none of us, I mean, we went through it. The three of us, we all went through, we were on the air, so we remember the flood well. We remember what was going on.
I was still in Murfreesboro. I got stuck there and couldn't get.
Well, that's because we had somebody tweet us about there was a Jimmy Buffett. I said, I know. I was supposed to, the wife and I were supposed to go to the Jimmy Buffett concert at Bridgestone Arena that Saturday night until we saw Lighthouse Christian floating down I-24. And we both looked at each other and said, well, I guess we're not going to the concert. 24 is underwater.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was.
But you didn't know, right? Until really, it's why I gave so much credit to the incredible coverage. While we've tried to do our part on radio, that the local television stations, until you see the drones, the helicopters, the view of what's really going on, that's when it puts everything in perspective. Until you get the visual, you don't really understand. Think about that Sunday morning when we woke up and saw, Holy crap. Look at Opry Mills. Look at downtown. Oh, my goodness. The helicopter shots of the flood. We really didn't understand how bad it really – I mean, yes, in our areas, neighborhoods, our area was completely underwater everywhere, parks, everything, floating away. But you still didn't understand the magnitude of what we just had gone through.
Yeah.
Until that Sunday morning.
Crazy times.
All right, we'll come back, kick off the third hour with Tim Hasselbeck. That's next.